first time.
You knew your origin.
Someday, somewhere, I'll make a difference.
It's a mockery.
I mean, we're not some deep space franchise. This station is about something.
The year is 2023. The name of the podcast, Babylon 5, for the first time.
Welcome to Babylon 5, for the first time. Not a Star Trek podcast. My name is Jeff Aiken, and I'm watching Babylon 5 for the first time.
And I'm Brent Allen, and I'm also watching Babylon 5 for the very first time. We are two veteran Star Trek podcasters who are watching Babylon 5 for the first time and searching for what we call the Star Trek-like messages in this series. Contrary to popular belief, Jeff, we are not comparing this show to Star Trek.
That is correct.
But we are going to search for those messages and decide how much we really like the series.
We are so much not comparing this show to Star Trek that we play a game just to stop us from doing exactly that. And that game is the rule of three. That means each one of us gets only three references to Star Trek during this episode.
That's it. Three. Uno, dos, tres. No substitutions, exchanges, or refunds.
Hey, Brent.
Yo.
We have a five-star review!
Oh, yes!
This one is off of Apple Podcasts, and it's from... This has got to be the greatest name of all time on Apple Podcasts. From Cap'n Stinky the Swamp Rat. Cap'n Stinky the Swamp Rat writes... It's just fun to say that.
That was... Was that Long Dark back in the last season? No, it's the one...
What was before that?
Distant Star.
Yeah, Distant Star Swamp. I forgot all about that.
Yeah, it was his little friend that looked like a Tellarite.
Yeah. I blocked like the first four or five, six, seven or eight episodes of season two out of my head.
Rightly so.
Yeah. Well, anyway, hey, back to the good stuff.
Yes.
Captain Stinky the Swamp Rat says, epic nuggets to chuckle over. This podcast has it all. Intergalactic discussion, thoughts on alien hairstyles, and a penalty buzzer. I grew up watching Babylon 5, and now I get to enjoy new perspectives as the hosts document their first time. I also get to laugh when predictions for future episodes are far from accurate, while muttering under my breath, just you wait. If you're looking for a Babylon 5 journey, this podcast is it.
I love the two things he says there. He says, one, I get to laugh at them as they make their predictions, which I mean, Jeff, I'm a comedian of old. Like, I like when people laugh at me because I know that actually means they're laughing with me.
Right.
I'm in on the joke, folks. Like, I'm not because I don't know, but I am in on the joke. But the other thing is he said that he gets new perspectives. And particularly for those of you guys out there that are longtime Babylon 5 viewers, if Jeff and I can come in and provide a new perspective on something for you, that's a win in my book.
Andrew reached out via our website, babylon5first.com. That's the number five and the word first.com, with some questions. I'll share one of them. It was a lengthy email, but I want to share just a little bit of it. It says, hey guys, first, I want to thank you for putting this show together. It has quickly become one of my favorite pods. The work you put in really comes across, and it's been a blast following along, watching episodes once a week as intended. I appreciate your unvarnished opinions and your discipline in not watching ahead. It makes your show special. Question, do you plan to cover the TNT movies? I ask this in part because my on-ramp to B5 was through In the Beginning, so I have a slightly different perspective on the show. While it does spoil a few things, overall, I feel In the Beginning is a better introduction than The Gathering. I hope you guys do cover Third Space in the middle of season four, and then watch In the Beginning before starting season five. I'll be there watching along.
Yeah, Jeff, we have a list. Our good friend John over at the Trek Profiles podcast sent us a, hey, watch things in this order. And I was looking at that list not too long ago, and it has all of those movies at the end of the series. And we have just kind of said we're going to follow that order. Now, we could change that up because I've heard this In the Beginning is really good to watch between season four and season five.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few others that get placed in various spots. So we haven't had that full discussion. That's not one we're going to have right now in this moment, but I think I'm safe to say, yes, we will watch them and cover them. As far as when that happens, right now it's scheduled for at the end of the show and not during the middle. But stay tuned. Jeff and I might change that as we will.
Yeah, I think we've had quite a few things offered for us, right? The movies, a couple books, a few comic series as well. And I think that I think it's safe, right, to say that we're wildly interested in all of them. We plan at a minimum watching the movies, reading JMS's autobiography at a minimum, probably Claudia Christian's as well, maybe diving into more. But also, we are at the very beginning of the third season out of five of a 110 episode series. So we'll figure that out at some point.
Well, Jeff, you know what we like to do along with our reviews and our comments and our rule of three?
What's that?
Well, when we get to the end of the episode, we like to play this game where we try to guess what the next week's episode is going to be based on hearing the title alone. We've never seen a description. We haven't read the really bad description that's on HBO Max. We haven't looked at the thumbnails. It's just, here's the title. What's the episode going to be about? That's usually where the people laugh at us about the predictions we make and say, just you wait. Usually, although I'm sure that happens during the Red Yarn sessions. We like to do that at the end of the episode. Well, we have reached that part of this episode where we look back at what we said last week, A Day in the Strife was supposed to be about, and we pay the piper for just how right or wrong we were. So, Jeff, just how right or wrong were you with your prediction?
I actually pulled up my notes to see exactly what I said, because I feel like my first couple words really describe how close I was. Jakar is trying so hard. I tried so hard to get this right. And I got kind of close. Like I said, it was going to be about Jakar. There was some Jakar in there. But I said he'd be trying to get the resistance to stand up. And it would be, here's where I completely missed the boat. I thought it'd be a series of tragically comedic failures for Jakar. And I thought it'd be a step towards him reaching rock bottom. And that was not the case.
Comedic would not be the word I would use to describe this episode.
Tragic, especially in regards to a couple of people in this one, I think would might be a little more apropos.
Yes.
What about you?
I do believe you get more points this week than I do, because you at least said Jakar. Jakar was even in this episode. I said Marcus.
Yeah.
We didn't see a black hair one in this entire episode, all 43 minutes of it. I said it was going to be a day in the life of Marcus the Ranger, and no, not at all, not anywhere close. So Brent gets a big old fat dub on that one. Donut. Not dub, donut. But Jeff, while I eat this donut over here, why don't you tell folks out there who haven't seen this episode, or maybe it's been a while since they've watched it, or maybe, just maybe, they're listening to us ramble on about a show that they themselves have never seen. Tell us what happened in this episode, A Day in the Strife.
The gears of bureaucracy grind in the 23rd century just like they do today. We are transported to most any city council meeting in the United States today. But this one happens to be Sheridan and Ivanova meeting with the TSA. I mean, the TPA, Transport Pilots Association. See, Babylon 5 is ramping up weapons inspections, so they're either going to have to slow down getting through customs or need to increase docking fees to hire more inspectors. Sheridan does what most any facilitator has wanted to do in most any meeting ever, and that's to get up and call out a super loud and overly entitled dude out on his bluff. After that, they call for a recess, but that's not the end of this story, I'm sure. You know, just like that other story about the upset dock workers that we had, you know, 2 years ago, and there's been so many follow-ups from. Well, an envoy from the Centauri show up, and it's two Narns. They're here to meet with Sheridan. Nafar, an obvious collaborator that just wants the Narn to be cool for a while, and Talon, his bodyguard. I feel like we might know Talon. Looks a little familiar. Well, they're here to shut down the armed Narn resistance on Homeworld, and that means picking up Citizen Jakar and sending him back. But Sheridan is not having it. There's no such thing as a boring day on Babylon 5. Let's see, what all's going on here? Londo has a meeting with Delenn where he tries to rekindle the friendship that Delenn is pretty sure they never actually had. There's a weird probe that shows up out of nowhere offering untold technologies if they can pass the SATs, and Dr. Franklin is the worst. Londo's tired of hanging around with a goody two-shoes, and he's trying to find Veer a new job. He convinces Delenn to let him go to Minbar to reopen the Centauri diplomatic mission. But Veer doesn't want to go. Londo paints it as a great career opportunity. So, head down, quiet and sad, Veer shuffles off on a transport. Hopefully to be seen again someday. The B5 crew are working on the SATs for this probe that's promised all kinds of great stuff, but the stakes here are a little bit higher than getting into an out-of-state college. If they don't answer right, the big old bomb inside the probe will explode and destroy the station. At literally the last minute, Sheridan figures out the probe isn't here. No, it's not here to test for intelligence so that these can they can meet up with these new species. It's testing for intelligence that might be a threat. They use some bots to push it far away from the station. Then they transmit their Scantron sheet with all the answers, and Sheridan was right. It blows up, and it happened far enough away that everybody's gonna be okay. But the Narns, Nefar is playing hardball. He tells them, all the Narns on the station, that if Jakar doesn't return to Homeworld, the Centauri will harass their families back home. In another chapter of the hit series, Jakar, servant leader, he agrees to return despite his friend, Garibaldi, begging him not to? Wow. Well, on his way to the ship, we see what happens when a leader is willing to sacrifice themselves for their people. They literally block him and tell him that he needs to stay and continue the fight. Talon, now I know where I remember this guy from. He's the dude from the abduction ship with Sheridan all alone in the night, right? So they drank a little bit of orange juice together. They reminisced. That's Talon. Cool. Good to see dudes doing all right. Well, he pledges himself to Jakar and the Narn resistance, and he does so by ruining a perfectly fine pair of gloves with his Chris knife, what they call a katak, kind of a samurai sword. And then Franklin. You know how Dr. Franklin is literally the worst? Well, not only that, turns out he's also hooked on stims. He's also a huge jerk, not only to the people that he works with, but his friends and his colleagues back home. At the end of this day, Londo's Jiminy Cricket has left. The Narns are unifying under Jakar. The probe crisis has been averted, and Franklin is one step closer to, hopefully, being fired. All in a day's work. Oh, not quite. We forgot about the Transport Association. Poor Ivanova and Sheridan end up right back where they started. Brent, what did you think of this one? A Day in the Strife.
So help me out with this episode. You texted me earlier today. I said, hey, Jeff, good luck with the Star Trek messages in this episode. And you're like, yeah, we could spend an hour talking about that alone.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so was this an episode about gun control and the Second Amendment? Or was this an episode about drug use? Was this an episode about not meddling in the internal affairs of alien cultures or cultures that are not your own? Was this an episode about not being burned out? Was this an episode about looking out for others? Was this an episode about being a conscience for those around you? Was this an episode about not dying? This episode was everything.
Everything.
Like smushed into one. Like the only thing this one didn't have was two guys with like half their face painted one color, half their face painted the other. And then the other guy is the exact same thing. It's just reversed and they're at war. Like, that was the only thing this one was missing. My first note on this was, is this episode about gun control and the Second Amendment? Because we've totally seen JMS make little veiled political commentaries like this before, a la green and purple or red and blue. Take your pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, whatever. Here's the thing. This was not a fun episode. I don't think we can say it was a fun episode. This was a good episode. This is a fine episode. Like, did this one knock my socks off? No. Did I have fun with it? No. Was I blown away by everything that happened? No. Actually, some of it was predictable. The whole thing, I don't know about you, Jeff, the whole thing with the ship at the end where he's like, nope, actually, they're just trying to fake us out and see whatever. I called as soon as it popped up. I was like, oh, I know exactly what's going on with that ship.
Yeah.
Like that was not a shock to me at all. I did go back and rewatch this one a second time before we recorded. And like, there's a point earlier where they said something in the episode where it's like, yeah, Sheridan's known for being this great strategist. That thing right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, they're obviously just going to put that in for this episode. Although he apparently is that. This was a little bit of a heartbreaker episode, though, because you got the whole thing going on with Jakar, who you're like, no, this is not a good idea. And this man's about to go sacrifice himself for the good of his folks. Oh, my gosh. The needs of the one outweighing the needs of the few. Or I'm sorry, flip that around. The needs of the many outweighing the needs of the one. Oh, my gosh. Like, all of those messages are just all over. But then Veer leaves. That one is probably the part that caught me the most by surprise. I did not think he would actually leave. And I have so many thoughts about Veer leaving and how it's such a bad idea. And Londo took a whole other step in his evilness for me in this particular episode. Like, he's digging himself in his heels, and to lose Veer in the middle of that is just something else. So yeah, I liked this episode. But I'm not really sure why, Jeff. What did you think of this one?
I liked this one a lot too, but I think I liked it really because, like, what I started the recap with the Transport Association and ended it with the Transport Association. And to me, like, I think I'm going to guess the point of this episode was to, you know, move some plot stuff along, of course, but really to show you a day in the life. This is what it's like to live and work on Babylon 5. And I really appreciated it in my job, in my day job. A lot of times this is what happens where I've got this just ridiculous level of bureaucratic sit around and blah, 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 and like your PowerPoint slide deck and this. Blah, blah, blah. And that, like, kind of is the wrapper of my day. And it's what people think I do all the time, you know, and that's when, oh, you command a international space station or intergalactic space station of diplomacy. Oh, you must be in meetings all day. So, yeah, that's the thing you think. But actually, you're solving this problem. You have a crisis over here. You've got somebody with a personal thing. Like, to me, it was a really good just slice of life kind of episode. Mm-hmm. I think what made it not fun, right? I also watched this one two times. I had a hard time watching it the second time in some parts because it's like, okay, it's a great day in the life. Life here sucks. Like, not a lot of good going on for anybody. Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. That's not the right word. Yeah, I thought it was good. It's a great episode. It's important. It's all those things. But I think it just drives home that, like, things aren't good on Babylon 5 at all.
This is one of those, like, if we were to take the entire season of season 3, and we understand that this is supposed to be a chapter, like, this is supposed to be a story, right? If we were to take this whole thing and somebody looks at us and goes, guys, you have a 4-hour movie. I need you to cut it down to like two and a half hours max.
Mm-hmm.
This would be something that gets cut out and left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But this would absolutely be the thing you put on the DVD for, like, oh, we hated to lose this one because we liked it so much. It just, I don't know in the long run that how much this one's going to matter.
Stand by. We'll be right back. Are you ready to take your Babylon 5 for the first time experience to the next level? With our exclusive Patreon, you'll get access to all kinds of cool stuff that you can only find there. Our recording notes, unedited reaction videos, an exclusive Discord community, and you can even be listed as a producer of the show. Plus, we even offer exclusive meet and greets and hangouts. You won't find this kind of experience anywhere else. Get all these amazing benefits, plus the opportunity to interact with other fans from around the world. It's being part of a huge community where everyone shares the same appreciation for Babylon 5. Subscribe at patreon.com/Babylon5First. That's the number 5 and the word first to get access to these incredible benefits. That's patreon.com/Babylon5First. We can't wait to see you there. I think two things out of this one matter. There's the Narn stuff with Jakar unifying, really, the resistance under him. Like, there's not, like, up to this point, there's been some questions, right? Are you the guy? Like, are you this? You blah, blah. Like, now he's totally the guy. And then I think Franklin's STEM thing is going to, you know, I was actually thinking about that when they ran the STEM story with him. I feel like I thought that was going to be Ivanova. that she was good, because they've talked a couple times about how she doesn't sleep well in certain situations. And, you know, that incredible scene back in season one with Sinclair and Garibaldi and Ivanova and them just, you know, talking quietly about the time with the Jesuits, and we'd meditate, put her to sleep. It was great. I'm like, oh, she's going to get hooked on stems. I wouldn't have thought Franklin, but also, of course, it's Franklin.
Right.
The quality of mercy back in season one again. Like, that's the reason that lady lost her license was stems. So they planted a seed, you know, 2 years ago that I think is going to sprout in Franklin this season. And it's just going to be a bigger way.
Do you mean that Franklin could lose his job, like, for real? That would be lovely.
What do they call the great, the great maker is what Londo calls it. That's whatever gods I worship, according to Delenn, right? Between me and whatever gods I worship. Yeah, please fire Dr. Franklin.
That would be just fantastic.
Do you want to talk about Franklin real quick?
No.
That whole thing? Well, I just want to get it out of the way.
No. Before we do that, I want to talk about two other guys real quick.
Okay.
I want to talk about Stephen Mocht. Stephen Mocht played Nafar in this episode.
Okay. He looked familiar to me.
I don't know if you know who Stephen Mocht is.
I don't.
He's one of those faces I think you would probably recognize if you were to go see him.
Peel off all the prosthetics.
Yeah. He usually plays like a cop in whatever show he's in. Usually kind of like the cop who's like, he's not in uniform. Like, he's the detective, but he's got the trench coat on and he's smoking a cigarette and he's got like a half drink cup of coffee in his hand.
Okay.
He's that guy, you know? But where I really know him from is the amazing movie, Jeff. He is the father, the Monster Squad. Did you ever see the Monster Squad? This is like a B-rated horror flick from the 1980s. Kind of like a Goonies wannabe doing monsters.
Okay.
Kind of a deal. The best line that ever came out of this movie was Wolfman's got nards.
I've heard the line. Yeah.
From this film here. Such a good movie. I'm not going to waste a Star Trek reference on it. Anyway, a guy who played in one of them other shows was also in this movie. Anyway, this guy was the dad. And whenever I see his face, I'm just like, Wolfman's got nards. It's that dude. Like, anyway, he's the cop. But
that's cool.
You mentioned the guy playing Talon as the guy who interacted with, who was it, Sinclair or whatever?
Sheridan. He was Sheridan on the Stribe ship.
Yeah. Do you know who else he was? Mm-mm. Yeah, we've seen him before too. We've actually seen him out of makeup and then in makeup and then stuff. He was Nelson Drake in the phenomenal, remarkable season one episode Infection. Turned into the, he's the guy.
No, he's the dude.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. When you started talking about, oh, we've seen him before, that's where I thought you were going. And then you didn't. And I was like, oh, I've got to point that out. Okay.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yeah. I'm going to leave that one. I'll let you look that up. But yeah, let's talk about Franklin and being too chicken to go talk to the girl until he goes and shoots up in the bathroom.
Seriously.
And, you know, he's like, no, it's not a problem. No, I don't have a problem. I can stop anytime I want.
The note I have, this is the note I have out of when Garibaldi had him over to his quarters, made him pasta, bread, a salad. I mean, Garibaldi went full Olive Garden for Franklin. Like,
this is the opposite of whatever that other thing was that we saw Franklin coming over to eat at Garibaldi's house. Remember when Franklin put him, Franklin put him on like the diet.
Yeah, it's the banya, the anchovy stuff.
The crushed anchovies. Somebody sent us the recipe for that, and I was with it until it said crushed, like smush, like mortar and pestle. Yeah. Anyway, this is like the opposite of that meal.
Yeah, it looked great. This is awesome. And Franklin was terrible, but he was also totally on point for an addict. Like, everything he said and did. And Garibaldi was totally on point for an addict talking to, like, the note I wrote was, this is great writing of a terrible person. And frankly, I think too, some great acting of a terrible person. I think that Biggs, who plays him, Richard Biggs, I think it's fantastic. It's great. But
I'm sorry. I thank you for bringing that up, because for as much flack as we give Franklin, the character, Biggs, the actor, is portraying him really well, except for that time he got creepy with that chick that just came out of cryo.
Yeah.
Although he might have even played that really well. Like, he was just given what the director told him to do. That conversation, I feel like I've been a part of before. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, you can't have that conversation the way Garibaldi had it with Franklin unless you have your own junk that you've dealt with, you know? And to have them turn around and be like, well, look at you. You've never met a buddy you didn't like, which totally low blow.
Yeah.
He called himself out, which that actually is something I never or very rarely hear. When somebody goes that route, they're not like, oh, dude, I'm sorry. That was a low blow.
But I think it's because they really are buddies, you know, like they're friends. Yeah. And Franklin's not so far involved in his disease yet that he's going to sacrifice friends yet. I think we'll get there. But what it really reminded me of, though, is in Oregon, we have a program and a few other states across the country, actually more and more have this, but we have a peer support program that's regulated by the government, and it's billable to Medicaid, and it's insurance can bill for it and whatever. But like, instead of just going to get addiction recovery services from some doctor or some professional with a whole bunch of master's degrees, you can get recovery services from a peer, from someone who does have addiction and is living in recovery. And it is wildly effective. It is
really
so effective because I can sit down, right? Like with a group of, I always use this example where I can sit down with a group of at-risk youth, you know, youth that are at risk for joining gangs or things like that. Mm-hmm. I'm a big dude. I'm all tatted up. I mean, yeah, they're pretty nerdy, but like I got a lot of ink all up and down. Like I can look there and be like, look, kid, you don't want to do it. It's bad. Okay. Don't do it. After they beat me up and rob me, they're going to leave and go immediately join a gang. I will be totally ineffective regardless of what letters I have after my name. But if I was in a gang and I did hard time and I did bad things, and I turned my life around and I talked to those kids, they're going to listen to me. It's the same thing with an addict, where if I sit down with, oh, I have all these degrees and I understand your, you know, the diagnosis and the principle of this and what, yeah, well, they're not gonna, but if I'm like, dude, when I was living on the streets and I was having to do these things to get from one fix to the other and this to eat, this is how I'd, oh, thank you for that. Like, I'm so wildly effective. This was that. And if Franklin doesn't fall off the edge, the ledge in this, it's going to be because of Garibaldi. Did you notice when Franklin was being his peak terrible self and yelling at that poor doctor back on Earth, just trying to like get dude on vacation to answer a molecular biology question?
Right.
But like he's yelling and like all the staff are turning and looking at him. There's a patient lying on the gurney. Like he even like stops. Turns and he even looks at Franklin. No, he's just like, dude, what is your problem?
That's funny. You know, speaking about Biggs acting the way that somebody would act. Okay. Not only is he acting the way that an addict would, I know that doctor.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry. I take that back. I know those doctors because it's a common thing to be overworked, overstressed, understaffed with the support people you have, to be tasked with doing stuff that is not actually your job. You know, do you know what doctors get paid for? You know what their number one job is as a doctor? It's not to see you as a patient. It's not to operate on you. No, it's to write the note.
Okay.
And then when the insurance company asks you for more information, for you to spend time talking to them and on hold while you're waiting to talk to them and scheduling peer-to-peer reviews. And that's really what doctors get paid for. Not actually doctoring, doing the paperwork so that the people that control the money will actually, you know, pay them for their work. But that burnout, I mean, it's so typical in the medical field, but especially among physicians. And for physicians, you know, I know people look at them like, well, yeah, but look how much they're paid and da, da, da. Yes, all of that's true. The other thing about those physicians, remember, they sacrifice, most of them, if they just went straight through school, sacrifice their entire 20s to be able to do this. And the decisions that they make on a day in, day out basis are life and death. That's a lot of stress and a lot of weight to carry on your shoulders. And here's Sheridan up in CNC being like, dude, if you don't give me these answers, we're all going to blow up. And he's like, okay, I'm sorry. The fate of the entire station is on my shoulders to make this happen. And I just want a nap. I get it. I've seen it. I live with it. I know. Like, I'm not saying that him being on drugs and turning all into house MD was the thing to do. The only thing he could have done, is just, you know, get in there and in a moment just be like, but I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I'm so scared.
Ladies and gentlemen, for your daytime Emmy consideration, Jesse Spano. Portrayed by Brent Allen.
Jeff, I have now saying in 2 weeks in a row on this show that you need to stop me.
No, I think it's great. This is good stuff.
What's going to happen? We didn't really resolve the whole situation with Franklin.
Oh, no.
Like we ended it with him like, yeah, I didn't use any stems. And we're like, we saw you.
You were massaging it into your hand. Saw the whole thing.
Yeah. I need this to come back. Like, this needs to not be dropped for the sake of the show. Like, you don't do something like this and then just let it go away.
Yeah. You know? I think it's going to come back. I think it's going to be big. And I think it's going to be pretty devastating when it does. Like, this, he's going to drop something big, and it's going to be very costly. Do you want to talk through the probe stuff really quick?
Sure. There's not a ton there. Yeah. Let's go for it.
Yeah. So here's literally all I have. Well, I have two things, actually. One, yep. Sheridan said, boom. That's cool. That's neat, because, you know, Savanova and then Sheridan said it. So literally all I have is, where'd this thing come from? Who sent it? And does it matter at all in the scope of everything?
My first note was, this thing's a joke, right? Like, this is just a joke. Like, it's not going to blast you with 500,000 megatons if you miss an answer. That is ridiculous. Also, I was like, I don't understand what they're doing here. And then I went, oh, I get it. It makes no sense right now. But I think this is going to turn out to be like season 3's Geometry of Shadows. Really? And if you remember that episode in season 2, we watched that one and we're like, this episode just makes no sense. What was the point of this episode?
Oh, people were mad. We got
blasted.
Yeah, they were furious with us.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, well, you had that conversation there. Okay, spoiler alert for you guys are keeping up with us. We're at this point in the timeline. They're like, well, but that conversation between the Technomage and Londo, where he's like, you got billions of people's blood on your hands, and they told you that he was going to turn bad. And I'm like, I didn't know that back then. How could I have possibly seen that, right? Like, now, looking back at it by the end of season 2, rewatching it, guess what? Oh, I now understand what he's talking about. I think this probe is going to turn out to be like that. I think we may come back, like, we're going to understand this probe a lot later down the line. Like, we're going to look at it now and be like, what the heck was that? And then we're going to see what it was, but it's just going to be a lot later.
Okay.
That's my guess. I could be wrong. Somebody out there is laughing at me going, just you wait right now. And that's okay. I'm glad for you guys too.
Yeah, my guess is we'll never see it. Hiding her hair won't even be mentioned again.
It won't bother me if we don't. I'm just making a guess that we will. So, although I will say, out of that whole situation, we got some amazing banter between Sheridan and Ivanova.
We did.
And I wish I would have written it down, but I didn't. There was just some great lines that they were popping off one after each other.
I just loved when, I forget what he said to her, but something like, well, if I wasn't all happy or whatever, I'd turn out like you. And she's all, did you hear that?
Yeah.
And dude, who's getting more and more lines, he's just like, right. I want to keep getting more and more lines. So no, I didn't hear anything.
That's right. You didn't.
Yeah. Somebody's automatic shower settings are about to get a little cold.
Yeah. That was it right there. That was this. I'm going to turn your automatic shower settings to ice cold. And I'm like, wow, you have automatic shower settings.
Okay. Well, it made me wonder too. Cause like, so she's like, I'm going to change your automatic shower settings. And then Garibaldi, when he was talking to Franklin, he's like, or to Ivanova after Franklin, was like, yeah, I read through Sheridan's personnel. You read through his personnel file? You can't do that. Yeah. I got to know things. Did you read through mine? Oh, I'd never do that. Whoa. People have access to a lot of stuff on Babylon 5.
Hey, bank accounts, personnel files. But see, here's the thing. Garibaldi should have access to a personnel file unless he really shouldn't be reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Then maybe he shouldn't have access to it.
Or he has access to everything but a redacted section or whatever. Like, yeah.
There's no way that anybody should have access to somebody else's bank account information, though. Franklin.
But they just, right? Yeah, they get, quality of mercy lady thing. They get the one security guy way back who was, you know, doing bets and stuff. They got his stuff. Like, it's all just out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Londo, because I'd rather end on a happier note than what we're going to end on here with Londo and Veer.
Londo and Veer. Okay, I said it earlier, and I'm going to say it again just to double down, because we got to start there. Londo took about 10 steps into villainy in this episode alone. What he did with Nafar?
Yeah.
Whoa. What he did with Nafar when he came in, like, I've really come to dislike Londo. I'm not yet ready to say I hate him, but I very much dislike him. This might be the first time, though, Jeff, for all the things he's done, this might be the first time I've wanted to full-on punch him in the face.
He was terrible. I captured two quotes from there. The one was when he's talking to Nafar about, and the way he starts it, too. Do you think it would be safe for someone like me to walk down the streets of Homeworld? I'd like to visit. And Nafar was great. He's just like, the mostly empty streets would be fine, you know. But then the ones I capture where he says, he asks if the executions are still happening.
Yeah.
And Nafar is like, yeah. And he's like, progress. He said it right to his face.
You know, here's the thing. How many Narns exist?
There can't be many.
Because you're killing 500 at a clip. You know, now, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we had a horrible, terrible point in our human history that was absolutely real. Let me just make that 100% clear. Called the Holocaust, where over 6 million people, human beings, were murdered in a very short span. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not that far-fetched to think 500 at a clip, but like, that just can't be good. You're just going to kill, you're going to pick 500 and just randomly kill them and execute them because somebody did something over here. Like, that is frankly, that's the stuff that leads to revolts and revolution.
Oh yeah.
Like, that does not stabilize and his whole reasoning behind it. Like, when you get to his reasoning, no, you must crush them. And various questions like, what could we've done to them? Isn't that enough? No, you must break them. I don't want people in 100 years to have to do what we've done again. You know, like Londo, dude, that is not okay.
Yeah, Veer's like, what do they even have? He's like, they still have their pride. As long as it remains, they will be a threat. Threat? They're starving. They're hiding. Oh my gosh. And that was the moment when Veer questioned him. That was the moment when Londo's like, you're gone.
You're done. Yeah.
Because I think that the interactions he had with Delenn showed there's still this sliver of him that's like, maybe I'm still a good guy. Maybe I'm still the fun guy at the party and it's all good. And Delenn's just like, nope. But I think that what it does, I think it's a combination of him kind of reaching out for a life preserver. Like, if Delenn had said, like, you know what, Londo, I do miss our talks. Why don't you come in? Let's have some Minbari tea and let's chat for a while. Like, that could have turned things around. But she had no reason to. They never talked. They were never really friends. Like, she was right. So what he's doing now, I think I brought this up before, he's trying to set himself up as a victim so that he feels justified. Well, what other choice did I have? You wouldn't even talk to me. You know, Jakar, I came to you with this and you didn't. Sheridan, I came to you with this and you didn't that. What did you expect me to do? I had to go and be responsible for the death of millions of Narns.
See, I get a different read on that. While I think you're 100% right and that is something he can pull from it, I don't know that I'm ready to sit back and say that that's why he's doing things the way he's doing.
Yeah.
I think he might milk it the way that you're talking about, but I don't know that that's why. Like, the way I read the whole thing, and to be clear, what we're talking about is he goes to the Lynn to get her to reopen the embassy so he can effectively shoo Veer away because Veer was acting like his conscience.
Yeah.
Veer is Londo's conscience and his conscience is poking at him. And we've seen Veer. We've talked about Veer getting stronger, getting more forceful, becoming a bigger voice as he should be to a guy that we're rooting for Veer.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
And Londo's sitting there and he's like, you know, despite my best efforts, I've actually really come to like this guy. And I need him out of here because he's being a conscience and I can't keep doing what I need to do. But he also says, he's like, I don't want to keep exposing him to everything that must be done. And I really read that as like because I care about him, like Londo truly cares about him. And he almost doesn't want to have him corrupted.
Yeah.
Because he knows how pure and how good Veer is. But also, I need you off my back because I can't do what I got to do if I got to look you in the face.
It's like when he says to Delenn, it's okay, he wouldn't spy on you. he would consider it rude. You know, it's like he's highlighting his virtue in that.
And he's scoffing at him at the same time, because that's just ridiculous. But actually, that's kind of cool.
It's kind of true. And but what I kind of took out of that, too, is how there, you know, in the self-development world, there's the concept that you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Sure. You know, and so if you're hanging out with a bunch of, you know, losers or whatever, you're probably going to be a loser. Hanging out with a bunch of high achievers, you're probably going to be a high achiever. And I took this to be that when you surround yourself with good people, it's that much harder to be bad.
Yeah.
And Londo knows he has to be bad. And so he's trying to slough off the good people. So doesn't have that conscience asking him those questions of just like, yeah.
100% agree. I think that's why he's sending him away for his own personal reasons. But there's also the, well, why isn't he just sending him back home to the homeworld then?
Yeah.
If he's trying to get rid of Veer, that's an easy, hey, I'm just going to get rid of you. He's doing it the way he's doing it because he actually has come to care about Veer.
He's trying to find a good place for him to land.
And he's like, this will be a good career path move for you. And Veer's like, yeah, but I don't want to go. And he's like, too bad. Pack your bags, buddy. You got to go. And we see him he leaves at the end. And I like the whole time I'm sitting there, like, well, at any moment, Londo's going to be like, Veer, no, come back.
They
gave us the look, and I'm like, oh, here it is. And then he turns on and walks through the door, and David freaking Netter's name comes up on the screen. I'm like, well, crap,
right under the welcome to Babylon 5 sign. That was some placement. I think what bothered, I mean, outside of just the obvious of what's there to be bothered about, this just a couple of episodes ago they wanted to send Veer back to the home world, and they were gonna get rid, you know, because Londo needs a better aide, and Londo put himself out there, you know, and I'm going to keep you here. And it even invited Veer's family out.
Yeah. Well, that was to screw with Veer, but
yeah. Yeah. But it's just like, where, like, I don't know.
I have a theory.
Okay.
I have a theory. This isn't a theory. This is a prediction. All right.
Okay.
You and I have discussed in previous episodes how we think Veer is going to continue to become more and more and more important over the course of the show. If Londo eventually has to graduate and become the emperor, like we think he's probably going to, Babylon 5 is going to need a new ambassador. And I think with this is the show promoting Veer or getting him in that, like starting him down that path to be the next ambassador or whatever. He's going to be back on the homeworld. Like, this is getting Veer more into politics now and getting him not just as the simple assistant. And, you know, it may even be like something happens on Minbar where he has to come back to Babylon 5 and he comes back to being Londo's assistant. And then Londo's going to go in and then he elevates and becomes the guy, you know, because ostensibly the assistant is going to be the next ambassador, right?
Yeah, but he's got to go get that diplomacy kind of entry on his resume sort of a thing.
Exactly, exactly. So that's what I think they're probably doing. And, you know, Stephen Furst is one of those guys who's not in every episode out of the season. You know, he's probably got a 13 episode contract. This is a good way to write, hey, this is where he's doing. Because Londo said, you're going to report to me.
Mm-hmm.
So Veer comes back to the station, probably not infrequently.
Just a different relationship and not here right. to question all of his murder decisions.
Can you imagine Veer coming back like wearing the garb of the Minbar? Like, cause you know, you go to other countries, you adopt their clothing and, you know, Veer's just eating it up. Like, hey, look at me. I'm wearing whatever. And Londo's like, what are you wearing?
I wonder if, you know, he's in an important diplomatic position as a Centauri. He's going to need a telepath with him. Ooh. What about that teenage kid, that the human teenage kid they sent to Minbar? Yeah. Bring her back and be Veer's telepath.
But Sheridan's there. Sinclair.
Yeah, so they got Sinclair a buddy.
And Veer knew each other. I mean, somewhat. Like,
this is where Veer hooks up with the Rangers, and then whatever is that. And I still deeply believe he's going to be a key part in the Narn resistance. But he's able to. Yeah, now he's got a direct line to Sinclair.
I'm just saying. But I totally anticipate seeing Veer adopt a lot of Minbari. Like, he's going to be the true ambassador. He's going to celebrate their customs. He's going to dive. He's going to learn their language. And it's just going to piss the Centauri off because they think that everybody should be like them, you know, because the Centauri want to fly their Union Jack all over the universe.
Right. So, exactly.
No offense to our English brethren. History is all I'm referring.
Yeah, no offense. It's just a fact that the most celebrated holiday in the world is independence from them. But I mean,
so Citizen Jakar, they say that with great disdain. Every, like, the word citizen never rolls off. It's always Citizen Jakar.
It's got some stank on that.
It does. Absolutely, it does. But he comes in. Okay, I want to talk about the guy Nefar. So he comes in and he's like, I'm here to replace Citizen Jakar. He can't be here talking to people. And my first question here is this guy a collaborator?
Oh, 100%.
Because we hate collaborators. If there's anything we learned from Kira Nerys, collaborators suck.
Exactly.
And also, Jakar is not going anywhere because he's under sanctuary, right? Like, you can't force him to go home.
Loved Sheridan's response. He's like, this isn't my problem. Like, go do your thing. We're good.
But then Nefar goes and has the conversation with Jakar. And I don't remember if the other Narns were there or not, but he's like, okay, dude, I know what's going on. And I know that all this stuff is happening, but you don't know how bad it's getting. You're here in this cushy station. You've got your corner desk. You're eating your meals. Do you know what it's like for us back on the homeworld? And you're causing that. He's like, and there's a piece of him. He's like, look, yes, I don't want the Centauri there, but we're going to lie low. We're going to get everybody stable first. And once we can get that situated, then we can climb back out of this. But for right now, you got to go, Pops. You know, and I was like, maybe he's not a collaborator. Maybe he is, but he's not. Like, and I don't know how to feel about Nefar. Jeff, how did you feel about Nefar?
I think he is a collaborator, but I also think he's a collaborator. I'm going to ride your reference and I'm going to say in the vein of Odo, where he's not collaborating to hurt people and to, you know, trap people and set things up. He's collaborating to try to make things cooler for the people that are around. He feels fully justified and feels like he's doing the right thing and that this is the path to Narn freedom. Like he fully yeah. believes that, despite here, you know, 200 and 300, almost 300 years before that time, we can look at that and say, no, there's all this history that tells you it never works. It never works right. That way to do it. But he thinks that it is. And I think it's tough because without diving into all the way into like into a Star Trek conversation about it, it is literally a needs of the many and the needs of the few conversation. But they're looking at different manys, right? Mm-hmm. Jakar is looking at all. It sucks for you guys on Homeworld, but there are Narns all across the galaxy going through this. And if it's got to suck for you for a while, well, that's what's got to happen, where Nefar only sees the many as the Narns on Homeworld. Hey, this sucks for us a whole lot. You need to stop. And so it just adds a layer to that needs of the many, needs of the few equation, where the definitions there matter a lot.
Well, but then you have those questions of, I love the answer that, was it Talon gives at the end? I don't think it was Nefar. Who says, maybe it wasn't Nefar. He goes, no, our freedom is greater than our safety.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I don't know that that's a Star Trek message. That's an American message.
That's just a human. I think it's a
human. Yeah. Well, is it? I don't know. A lot of people might not agree with that, but that certainly is more real world political. Like, your freedom means more than your safety. And yeah, this may be what it costs to get us there, but overall, that's the better thing. Yeah. And what I think of here is, yeah, you're trading the good for the great. Yeah. I'm going to give up the good so I can have the great. And it's going to suck to get rid of the good because it really sucks to not have that.
Especially when the good is basic subsistence.
Right. Basic survival. Right. Yeah. And not watching my friends and family and my loved ones and my little daughter go off to concentration camps or labor camps or whatever they said.
Well, they use different words, but we know what they're talking about.
Right. Exactly. That is just horrendous and horrible. And I don't know truly how things like that can still exist on Earth today.
I know,
you know, and
it is mind blowing how this far into the 21st century are these things happening. But now with Babylon 5, we ask how this far into the 23rd century,
yeah,
intergalactically, are these exact same things happening? I thought it was great how Jakar kind of brought the Narns together early on and really just, he saw it, how the Centauri, they don't, like, they want the Narns gone. You know, that was crystal clear way back in Signs and Portents when Morden asked Londo what he wanted. He said he wanted every Narn dead, gone, finished. He made that pretty darn clear in this episode too. But they don't want to do it 500 at a time. I mean, it's going to take a long time to make that happen. And it's going to be messy and expensive. So you know what we should do? Make them kill each other. Boom, problem solved. And they are throwing scraps on the ground and forcing them to fight each other over that. And Jakar sees that. And this is the thing too, in a political and societal climate that we live in today, where we look at people in the quote unquote ivory towers out there, how can they make decisions on our lives? You know, he's a CEO. What do they know about real life? Blah, blah, blah. Well, Jakar's view, sitting in comfortable Babylon 5 in Sanctuary and eating meals and having his corner desk, allows him to see that bigger picture and allows him to see that they're making them fight over nothing. And he's able, because he's Jakar, he's able to verbalize that. He's able to use that to bring them together and have them stop fighting it. But if he was in it, if he was Nefar on Homeworld doing this, he couldn't have that vision. He couldn't see that. Now, I'm not saying that people in ivory towers are good or that we should listen to and trust every C-suite person that exists out there. That's not what I'm saying, but I think we have to give credit to, you know, perspective and point of view. It means a lot. It means everything. I did like on a fun note, I liked it when Talon and Sheridan were having their orange juice. That was pretty fun. And then Sheridan was like, yeah, man, I don't know. I don't know what people would think, you know, about an Earth captain walking around with a Narn bodyguard. And he says, they would look at you and they'd say, here is a man who will live to be 150 years old.
Right.
I thought that was great. That was awesome. And then the last note I have on the Jakar and the Narn stuff outside of my final thoughts. But when Garibaldi dropped into Jakar's quarters and tried to talk him out of going, that was awesome. And what I love, not only was it cool of Garibaldi, but it was just this cool theme when it was done. Like when Garibaldi kind of said his piece and headed out, Jakar says, thank you, Mr. Garibaldi. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost like, hey, so Londo sucks. I'll call you Mr. Garibaldi now. Like, I'm cool. I like that scene a lot.
Well, Jeff, we've certainly been broaching. I think we've already crossed over into it, into that spot of the show where it's time to really boil it down and see. I think we've already done it, but let's just name it for what it is. What parts of the show have that Star Trek quality to it? What are the deep moral messages? What are the mirrors to society? Where is the hope? Jeff, is there any hope for a better future in this episode? You are going to rate this scale on this episode on a scale of 0 to 5 deltas as to how Star Trek this episode is. I'm going to take the other side. I'm going to take the easy side this time. I'm going to do the Star Furies on this one. Jeff, what you got?
There is so much. There is so much. And we've talked about a lot of it. There was an overarching theme to this episode that I really want to dive into for this one, because we've talked about a lot of the other stuff. But one thing I've noticed over the last couple episodes is there's a phrase that has been dropped a couple of times, and that's it's nothing personal. And I think that when we look at things like war or different isms out there or genocide, it's never personal. Right. That's kind of what helps the perpetrators sleep at night. And we've been hearing more and more of that. And I think part of what brings that is this overarching theme in the episode. It's pride, right? There's the pride of the Narns that Londo wants to crush. There's the pride in Londo to not have Veer around to question him anymore. There's the pride that Jakar has in his people. There's the pride that the whole crew of Babylon 5 has, thinking that they can respond to this probe and answer all of its questions. And then the pride of Dr. Franklin, thinking that he can do it all. Pride turns out really only, like, turns out positively only one time here, and that's with Jakar. And that's because his pride is in something other than himself. He's selfless, not selfish. And that's servant leadership, right? That's what it's all about. And servant leadership is one of the core messages of Star Trek. Jakar's pride, as compared to, say, Franklin's pride that shows up with him using stims, or Londo's that shows up with him bad-mouthing Narns and sending Veer off, Jakar's pride shows up as humility. If he has to die to save others, okay, let's do it. But then that same pride gets reflected in the people that he is willing to die for. This is the power of that servant, that the being proud to serve people comes from. We mentioned the line a minute ago. What's more important than safety for the Narns? Freedom. But I also think loyalty comes into that. Nefar believes that he's trying to do the right thing, and he's showing loyalty to the Centauri to try to do the right thing. Jakar believes he's doing the right thing, and he shows unquestionable loyalty to the Narns, to the point of willingly walking onto a ship to his horrible death that's waiting for him. But because of that, because of his humility, those Narns, are loyal to him. Now, where they turned on Nefar, and I really like the way they showed it, you know, because this is something as a leader you like to hear. They all lined up, you know, bit by bit, and they said the line here was so great. You are valued and you are needed here.
Yeah.
That's the hope, Brent, that it takes one person with humble pride in what's going on to give us hope to fight the fight that needs to happen. We talked about all the other stuff throughout the episode. This, Brent, is a 5 Delta episode.
I wholeheartedly agree. And Jeff, as you were saying that and you were talking, I was just kind of looking back through my notes over the last couple of episodes. So far, I mean, we're only 3 episodes in.
Mm-hmm.
Season 3 has been a heavy Delta season so far.
Yes.
Over 3 episodes. So, and I kind of hope it keeps going.
I know. I love it. I love it.
This might be like where we sit back and start going, okay, this is what this is what sci-fi really as a genre, I think, serves. It just lends itself to this kind of stuff, which is why we're doing this whole show to begin with.
Exactly.
That those words they use though, you are, what is it exactly? You are something and needed here.
Value. You are valued.
You are valued and needed here. Direct words of affirmation are so important. To be able to look at someone and go, you are smart. And I'm not talking about in a pack-led way. I'm talking, you know, you are smart, but to look at somebody, you are creative. You are good at this. To verbally say you are this thing, you are valued and we need you. Because so often, you remember like episode 3 or 4 last season? Sheridan's like, I don't really know if I want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And to have somebody sit back and go, hey, Sheridan, you're good and we need you here. We need you here. Those kinds of words go a really far, far way in talking. You know, I think about it mostly in terms of being a parent these days. You know, hey, kid, you're good at this and we need you. The family needs you. Or like my son right now, he's gearing up for spring football. Like they're in their training, summer or spring training time right now, you know, and a phrase that we use a lot is junior team needs you. You've got to go out there and get ready so you can be ready, but your team needs you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very much with you, but I'm not supposed to be talking about that. I'm supposed to be talking about Star Furies.
Yeah, Let's talk about Star Furies. Yeah.
You know, Star Furies is after all this time we've been doing Star Furies for a season and change now, Jeff. It's still this weird mix of how Babylon 5 is it and just how much do we enjoy the episode. If I look at it on just pure enjoyment, like this is maybe like a 2.5, 3, like this wasn't like a stellar standout. I'm going to remember this episode for a long time. Every episode is somebody's favorite episode. So somebody's like, oh, I love A Day in the Strife. That's just amazing. It wasn't that standout to me, but you talk about all those messages you just talked about and not delivering it so much in a Star Trek way as much as a Babylon 5 way, right? Which often is a showing us how we get there, not necessarily being on already there, right? Or doing it in a way that you just don't expect and subverting expectations. And to see Jakar be like, yeah, I'm leaving. And all of these people kind of stand up and be like, I am Spartacus, you know? You are valued, and I just don't feel like we would see that very much on Trek, not in that way. You know, maybe Worf would go off and sacrifice himself, but then people are like, they wouldn't try to convince him to stay. Like, they would, like, go rescue him or something.
Well, they let him go when he did that, right? And then and then tried to back him up afterwards when he got called on, or when Neelix left to go and, you know, help a colony and possibly die himself in doing it. Yep, they let him go and they celebrated him leaving to do the thing.
You know, I absolutely could see this as a Star Trek episode, though, with the B plot and that whole probe thing.
Totally.
You know, that's what the bridge crew is taking care of while we work with like one of these other two or three of these other people down here. So I don't know that it really, in many ways, it felt very Star Trek. In many ways, it didn't. So I'm going to kind of split this one right down the middle. I'm just going to give it a 3-star Fury deal. I liked it. I didn't love it.
But just like last season, Brent, we are currently creating the 100% completely accurate definitive ranking of the third season of Babylon 5. Our current rankings have Convictions in second place and Matters of Honor in the top spot. So Brent, where do you put A Day in the Strife?
And Convictions was the episode where they were poking people.
Yes.
And we got Londo and Jakar in an elevator.
We did. Don't sing which it was, again.
I'm not going to. But that was such a fun scene. That was such a good bit. But the question is, do I put this above Convictions then, or do I leave it below Convictions? And as much as I like Londo and Jakar in an elevator, I think this one had a more complete piece to it. The whole piece with Jakar was incredibly moving, I thought. And I think this was a stronger episode. Probably not by much, but I'm going to put this at number 2.
Wow.
You seem surprised by that, Jeff.
A little bit. I think because, as we talked about, this one was fine. It was fine. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that, but as I think about it, you know, I mean, Convictions really had like a handful of standout scenes, you know, and they were Londo related, right? The Londo and Lanier stuff in Med Lab, and then the Londo and Jakar stuff in the elevator. But
I did really like in Convictions, because I brought this out last week, and now that we're talking about this, I remember this. I liked the looking at Londo and how he responds based on how two people respond to him, and setting those two pieces next to each other. I did think that was really cool. Ooh, is it too late to change?
Well, let me tell you this, though. It's not. You still can. But, I mean, the other thing was the main story of Convictions just held no water, right? It was dude who got picked on in high school, so he decided to bomb the station.
That was bad. That really was bad. Yeah, no, I'm leaving this right where it is.
I don't disagree. If I wanted to, it wouldn't matter. I don't get you get to rank it, right? That's how it works. And, Brent, that's it for A Day in the Strife. Next week is our 50th episode.
Is it really?
It is.
We're at 50, and this is 110. We're almost, we really don't need to celebrate 50. We need to celebrate 55, because that's our halfway point, right?
Well, it'll be 50. Well, it's not 50, maybe like 59, because we do our wrap ups. So I'm counting our wrap ups in number 50, right? So,
okay.
This would be our 48th episode coming up.
All right. We're getting
enough for that, but still, it's kind of fun. Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of a cool thing. And for the 50th episode, we will be watching Passing Through Gethsemane for the first time. Now, this is one of the games we like to play. Brent talked about it earlier in the episode, but we've never seen these episodes before. We haven't looked ahead. We haven't read anything about them. We don't know anything more than the title of the episode. And we like to guess what we think it's going to be about. So, Brent, what do you think Passing Through Gethsemane is going to be about?
Yeah, Jeff, I feel like I get one of these every handful of weeks it's a strong biblical reference, which draws up some imagery.
They're like, hey, what degrees do Brent have? And let's pick one of those.
This harkens back to Voice in the Wilderness to me a lot. But Passing Through Gethsemane. Gethsemane was Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane praying before his crucifixion. And he gets captured by the Roman authorities. There. So this would presumably then be about somebody passing through their darkest hour, right? Maybe even right before making a big sacrifice, maybe even deciding if they want to make the sacrifice or not, because that was the whole thing where Jesus was like, hey, if you can let me not do this, that'd be really cool. But if I got too cool anyway, somebody trying to decide if they want to be a sacrifice. We saw that with Jakar in this episode, right? So I don't think it's Jakar, because Jakar has already proven that he is willing to be the sacrifice. So he's already made that determination. So I don't think it's Londo, because Londo is not willing to be a sacrifice. I think we've established that. So Delenn, maybe Sheridan. Sorry, I've got to talk this out. I'm a verbal processor. That's what I'm going with. It's Sheridan or maybe Delenn. Or maybe them both together. Sheridan and Delenn. Oh, that's what I'm going with. Sheridan and Delenn. facing this future they have together, because, you know, they have that like connection thing. And I think we're going to learn maybe more about what that is. And they're going to look at it and kind of go, do they have to become sacrifices themselves for the greater good? Or like, do they have to sacrifice their job, their position, their something in order for something else to happen? Jeff, I think, did we predicted, I know I've had this thought in my head. Have we talked about it? I'm just going to sit here and vaguely reference something and then not tell you what it is. No. Didn't we discuss maybe in a season wrap up, like a prediction for season 3, that like Babylon 5 was going to like succeed from Earth Force?
Yes, we did talk about that.
Maybe that's what this is them looming on that decision of like, okay, do we have to take Babylon 5 away from Earth and like become our own thing? Because we haven't talked about it yet, Jeff, the intro to the show, not our show, but to the show itself. And I noted something this week, cause it's Ivanova doing the voiceover. She says it became, in the year of the Shadow War, it became something much more. And I think that there's a lot, like that's supposed to tell you kind of what happens in the season, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there's a piece of watching how Babylon 5 becomes the last best hope for victory. Like not just, oh, one day it is the last best hope for victory, but this is how it becomes that. And this, I think, might start us. So Delenn and Sheridan facing their future together, knowing what's to come, having to make this big decision that might be Babylon 5. Wow. I don't know. How does Babylon 5 break away from Earth Force? I don't know how that works. Could they just be like, we're our own thing now?
Change, take the logo off your uniform. There you go.
What do you think, Jeff?
This is a hard one, Brent, to figure out, because Gethsemane means one thing, right? You know, I mean, like in the Bible, if you really dive into, especially the Synoptic Gospels, when he got arrested, you know, the night of the Last Supper wasn't the only time they were in Gethsemane. It was a normal place. You know, yeah. I mean, Judas took off after the supper and he went to get the Romans and then walked up to Jesus. He knew he was going to be there because that's what they did. They hung out, they drank some wine, went to the garden
all night.
Yeah. Went to the garden and hung out, you know? So, but in the vernacular, right? Like Gethsemane means the agony of, you know, sweating blood, begging for the cup to be passed, all that kind of stuff. And so at first I was thinking the same thing. Like the note I even took was, this has got to be the beginning of Sheridan's trial. This is where he really starts getting put to the test and has to decide, you know, am I going to be the one or not or whatever. But then as you were talking, I started thinking about the title and you know, JMS gets cutesy with the titles sometimes. A Day in the Strife, right? You know, and now for a word, passing through Gethsemane. So imagine that the agony in the garden is happening right over there. You know, Jesus is alone. The apostles are asleep and he's upset with them because they should have stayed up and awake with him and praying, but they didn't. And you're just walking through. And there's a dude over there sweating blood and crying to his dad who you can't even see, and a bunch of dudes passed out drunk around him, and you're just passing through. Maybe it's not our main players who are going through something. Maybe we are observers in somebody else falling apart. Ooh. So I am going, and it's hard to say, right? Because it could be the Narn. We already watched the Markab fall apart. Is somebody else going to fall apart? Maybe right. This is a new player of some kind. I don't know. What I'm going to guess, though, because I got to guess something, right? It's going to be our Earth Force crew on Babylon 5 experiencing and observing somebody else in their biggest trial. Oh, it's a Night Watch thing. Oh. So they're going to watch Zach. Zach's in the main credits now.
Kanicki, right?
Kanicki. Kanicki is going to be put to the test, and they're going to be observing it. That's going to be the thing that's going on. And this is where it feels early, and it's probably not the right time. I'm probably super wrong, but I think that we're going to see Kanicki face his trial and have to determine if he's going to go full Night Watch or not. But we'll find out right here next week. Hey, thank you everybody so much for joining us for our discussion today. This means the world to us. Please don't forget to subscribe. If you're watching us on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. If you're listening to us on whatever podcatcher you're on, give us the subscribe right there, and then you'll get notified of all of our great episodes. And if you haven't already, stop by Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Audible, Podchaser, any of those cool places. Leave us a rating and a review. I will read it right here on the podcast. So until next time.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah, Brent.
So, you know, I've been thinking lately. I spoke with the ambassador and we've come up with the new plan that for you is a good opportunity.
I don't think I want a new opportunity, Brent. I like this one. This is a good opportunity.
Too bad. It's happening anyway. Go pack your bags.
All right. Well, peace, victory, and long life to you.
It's my first time.